Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Inner Voice Intuitive Hour with your host, Jenny Seek.
Hi, folks. This is Jenny Seek, and this is your weekly forum for connecting with your intuitive process, all things metaphysical, and honoring and recognizing your soul self. Thanks for tuning in, and enjoy the ride.
Hi there, everybody. Thanks so much for listening to Inner Voice Intuitive Hour this evening. For folks who aren't familiar with what Inner Voice Intuitive Hour is, it is a forum, a discussion, a call-in show for people who are interested in the relationship between imagination, setting your intention, intuition, and manifestation. So if any of those topics are of interest to you, you're definitely in the right place tonight. For folks who have not listened to the show before, I encourage you to share your shiny, pretty picture with Inner Voice so we know that you're following the show and the station. That way you'll get updates on future topics that are coming up on Inner Voice. So I do want to let you know that on January 1st, I will be having a guest, and hang on here, because everything just kind of went fast here. I'm trying to remember who the guest is for January 1st. And you know what? I cannot find it right now. But January 1st, That is right. I'm really excited about this show. Anika Odener will be on. Anika is a life coach. She just started a wonderful program called Inspiration Radio. I was lucky enough to be on it about 3 weeks ago, which is all about people who have survived things that have been really, really difficult and who share their stories of triumph and how they've gotten up and how they've used those adverse situations to be able to spur them on to follow their dreams and to help other people get out of this rut and really identify for themselves what's authentic and what's soul-centered and what's life-giving for them. So I was lucky enough to share my story, and she will be story with me as well and talking here in the audience who are interested in sharing your story with Anika. If you have a story of inspiration and transformation, she is really interested in hearing it. So I encourage you to check out her radio program, Inspiration Radio. You can find her on Facebook. You can follow her show that way. And then on January 7th, actually she didn't say yes yet, but I'm pretty sure Jen Duchenne will be on. Jen Duchenne has a show called La Chic Speak Radio, and she speaks to women who are in transition about how to empower themselves in the world. I was lucky enough to be on Jen's show, I think it was back in the summer. And so these are the things that are coming up on Inner Voice. I have some other guests in my back pocket, but that is what I know about for sure. I want to share tonight a little bit. This is a little off topic. Usually I often have guests where I talk about something that's strictly metaphysical, but tonight I want to talk about sacred celebrations. My life has been, you know, really interesting because it has taken me time to strip back the layers and figure out what speaks to me and to take it seriously in my life and to value my own perspective. You know, we all thanks so much for your patience. I'm having some issues with my telephone. We kind of live in the Bermuda Triangle, and sometimes the phone just cuts out. So if that happened during the show, just go refresh your drink. I'll call right back in. Anyway, so back to this topic about sacred celebration. Sometimes our families aren't the best fit, and it can take us years to figure out how to honor who we really are in the world, how to show up with authenticity, how to show up without apologizing. And that was definitely my story. I'm really kind of coming full circle with that, and I think, you know, developmentally, we're all in different places, and we go through different things, and I'm figuring out that even though I've been estranged from my family, that there's a way for me to connect with them again at this stage in my life, and that I probably want to do that. But I didn't know that that would happen, you know. I didn't know that that would be part of my journey. And if it is part of your journey, that's wonderful. And if you decide that, you know, you can't do that, that's fine too. You have to look at it on a case-by-case basis and figure out what's right for you. But, you know, this has been a really, really interesting holiday season because it's all about doing things on my own terms. I'm writing a series of articles for Bellspree magazine. I encourage you to check that wonderful publication out as well. That can be found online, and that's Mel Salisbury, and she does a wonderful, wonderful job with it. Anyway, I'm writing a series of articles called Jenny's Gems, Intuitive Inspirations of a Grounded Mystic. And I, for this particular month, I wrote a column about sacred celebrations and honoring the sacred. And I know that, you know, it's so important to do things on our own terms, because if we don't, we compromise our own vision and we don't have the same amount of respect for ourselves. And that affects our energy in our life. That affects our life energy. So when we come around to the new year where we have this opportunity to shine and to show up and to share our gifts, if we've compromised during the holiday season, what's true for us, or how we share, you know, with others, if we haven't shown up authentically, that can really affect the way that we start our new year. I've been doing a lot of work on past life regression. I was lucky enough to go get a session in past life regression. I'm also reading a book called Awakening Past Lives, which, if you're interested in past life regression, is a wonderful book. It's written by a psychotherapist, Dr. Amoroso, who focuses his practice primarily on past life regression. And I am, like, very much aware of the baggage that I've carried into this life from past lives, and that I've allowed to flourish in this life far too long because I wasn't clear and I hadn't cut the cords. You know, we come in, Joseph Hillman talks about this idea of a calling, having a calling. Jung talks about this idea of having a calling as well. And having a calling is being able to figure out what we're here to do in this lifetime, so that when we bring in karmic ties to, you know, past lives and to our family of origin that don't really fit, our energy is laden down and it's heavier than it needs to be. And when it's heavier, it's harder for us to give our gifts and figure out how to lighten our load and figure out how to share really, truly what we're meant to share in this lifetime. So I've been lucky enough. Also, I want to give a shout out to Randy Pierce, who's a wonderful life coach as well, to join her Dreamweaver group. And you know, that's been really miraculous. I did that through Jen Duchenne, and that's a 30-day program, and they give you a private Facebook group to chat with each other and this sort of thing. And that group, you know, I just jumped at the chance to do it because the group of women was so wonderful, and it just felt like the right thing to do. And I'm really trying to honor in my life this spontaneous energy that shows up. And when it says go, I'm trying to go with it instead of going up in my head and coming up with all sorts of practical reasons not to do things. So I joined this group, and in this group, she sends out a message to you every day to focus on your manifestation and your intention setting. Well, the last activity that she did, well, she did two activities that were really, really wonderful. But the first activity that she did was she had us do a video of next year, where we are at this time of next year in terms of our practice and our goals and things like this. And so that was a really, really powerful and catalyzing experience, because when I watched the film back that I'd created, the little video, I really sounded like I knew what I was talking about. Like I sounded really self-assured and I looked really clear and I shared things. And you can tell, you know, how comfortable someone is with the content, with what they're sharing. But they just like let it roll off their tongue. So that was a really exciting piece for me to see. But the next activity that she had us do is really powerful, and it's still kind of playing its way out, and I'm still working with it. She had us take 5 incidents from our childhood that we either were positive or negative, it doesn't matter, and to reframe them. That means to look at them from the perspective of an adult, but also to allow our inner child to come into the space so that we can speak to them and to imagine the situation unfolding again with everyone who was in it, and then also with our family member or the family member that was in the situation, and then with our adult self and our child self, so that we can speak to our child self about what we needed, and as an adult we can handle the situation differently. And it's very funny because then I went out to breakfast with a dear, dear friend of mine, one of these like magical sisters who I figure out a lot with about things. And, you know, I'm kind of coming up with these different scenarios that showed up. And one of them I'll share with you, I was given a pet cat from my parents when I was a young adult. And this cat was amazing. His name was Jabberandy. He was an amazing, huge black cat. And we called him Buddha Kitty because he would sit like in that yoga way with his little feet out in front of him like he was sitting in a chair, but he wasn't. And he would just sit there and he would take up the space in the whole room. Like you felt like there was no distinction between him and the space. He was just in the space and of the space, and he was so content and so magical. And when he died, my father wanted me to put his ashes in this pet cemetery that we had in my parents' backyard. And I had been doing some really amazing inner work, some growth work around chakra balancing and yoga and meditation, preparing to move to California. And I had been walking to my job at Giant Eagle, where I worked in the florist department. I had been doing all this chakra work, and there was this particular bridge, and anybody who knows anything about the archetype of the threshold or crossing the threshold, this is a powerful, powerful archetype for moving from one stage of life to another, one stage of consciousness to another, what have you. And I would cross this bridge, and I would look down there, and I wrote some poetry about it, and it was the bridge that connected to Neil Road. And I would look down there, and I realized that that's where I wanted to scatter my cat's ashes. And my father got very angry about this because he said, that cat's never even been down there. And I thought, boy, you know, here we are in this situation. If you look at Jungian typologies, you look at the Myers-Briggs, my dad's a thinker, I'm a feeler. So it doesn't really matter that my cat's not been down there. What matters is that I connect the energy of my cat and the experience of the magic of my cat with this bridge. And that's way, way more important than the fact that my cat's been down there. So I'm just starting to look at some of these places where I lost power or where I had to come up against this angry energy with my dad and play it out. And now I wouldn't care. I'd be like, you know, screw you. That's what I intend to do. Like, I wouldn't be in this place where I would give all my power up and get angry with him because I gave my power up. And that's definitely a developmental place to be. There's nothing wrong with getting angry. Getting angry is part of figuring out who you are. It's part of separating. It's part of being able to say, I'm separate. I have my own ideas about things. I don't care what people are saying about me. It's part of that process of getting to that place. So these activities that I've been getting to do, and I've just only come up with 2 scenarios, it's going to take me longer than, you know, I can't come up with 5 at the drop of a hat. I just have to kind of allow for them to filter in and then work with them. But it's been very, very powerful inner work to be able to reframe it and to be able to give that back to my inner child. So I encourage you to think about situations in your own life where with a parent you have lost power by, you know, losing your cool or, you know, looking weak or however it was important to you to look empowered. How did you lose power in this situation? And how could you go back now and reframe it back to your inner child, what she needed, you know, which for me was a need for magic and a need for support to find magic in my life and my world. How could you give that back to your inner child? How could your adult give that back to your inner child? How could you parent yourself? So that's been really, really a powerful, powerful activity. I'm writing a column, like I said, for Bellspring Magazine, and this activity, this article that I wrote this time is all about losing power and gaining power and how to show up authentically, how to create sacred practices at the holidays. You know, I love Christian religious Christmas carols. I love the second and third verse that nobody knows of all the religious Christmas carols. And I love going caroling. I had a dear friend this year say to me, do you want to go caroling in this home? And, you know, I thought about it right up to the time when I was getting ready to go, and I just was trying to figure out, am I going to lose power? Like, am I going to have to give away too much power? This particular friend, even though I love her dearly, is really in that camp of, you know, the war on Christmas and this whole idea that there's a war on Christmas, and by saying happy holidays, you're not sharing who you really are, and there's a war on Christianity, and da 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 da. And the point of the story is not to take a side about whether there is or whether there isn't. I have my own opinion for sure. But in that context, I just knew that if we went into the situation and we were to go to that group home, go to that elder people's home, and to sing, that the framework for it would be this whole war on Christmas, and there would be lots of conversation about this war on Christmas and how we can't be who we are. And I didn't want to go. I go because I knew that I would be cast in that light, and I would have to be part of that group dynamic where I, you know, had to have a war on Christmas too. And I don't have a war on Christmas. I have no problem with anybody being Islamic, anybody having Jewish beliefs, any beliefs, atheist, agnostic, pagan, do-do-do-do-do. We all have our own drums. We beat to, you know, we have our own drummers and we have our own songs, and that's good. That's what makes and creates diversity. So in that context, I chose not to go caroling, but I'll see this person right around Christmas time. I'll go over to their house, and there'll be a conversation about the war on Christmas, and then it will probably lead into the, you know, separation of church and state and this whole conversation that I'm definitely in the opposite, you know, the opposite direction in terms of the way that I look at these sorts of things. But, you know, in that context, it won't bother me because I'll be at their house, inside their house. That is the way that they're going to approach the situation. That is what's important to them. And that's okay. It's just I didn't want it to lead, to be led in this way where it would be assumed that I felt the same way, and then I would feel this tension around it. So in the article, I talk about this third thing that's created through the tension of the opposites. Jung talks about this idea of the tension of the opposites, right? This idea that as we grow developmentally, we're able to hold the tension, and we're still able to honor ourselves. We're able to honor our ego. We're able to honor what it is we need. So in the tension of the opposites, there are two different ways to go. There's black, there's white, there's good, there's bad, there's right, there's wrong. There's a very dichotomous way of looking at something. And when you hold the tension, it's when you choose to go over to that friend's house and kind of engage in that conversation about the war on Christmas, even though it is in your belief, and you have enough love that you can extend yourself beyond your framework and hear what the other person is saying and understand and value what the person is saying and still stay in your own body and in your own space and not lose power. And Jung talks about this idea of this third thing, this transcendent function that comes out of the experience of doing that. And when that happens, that third thing is love. It's valuing the fact that we're imperfect and there's still love there. So I wrote about this in the article. And, you know, as I've gone through my own life and my own experience with the holidays, I've changed things a lot. You know, I've been had very pagan leanings, very nature-based leanings for many, many years. But I grew up as a PK, as a preacher's kid. So I love many, many of the Christian traditions. I love the Advent wreath. I love, like I said, all the versions of all the religious Christmas carols. I love the Advent songs, and I love the lighting of the candles and all of the things that go along with the Christian traditions as well. And so, you know, I've kind of come full circle, and I don't really call myself, well, I say I'm witchy around the edges, but I don't really call myself a witch anymore, and I don't identify directly as a pagan. For me, it is more all-encompassing than that, and it is about embracing the nature in everything. So to me, that has to do with viewing the world in terms of archetypes, these larger kinds of energies and stories that we tell and how we tell those stories, and understanding that when we're working with archetypes, that we have to tell a story that has juice and has richness and has authenticity in it, and that speaks to who we really are, not just our family of origin, not just our, you know, nation state, not just our class, but who we really are on a core level. And sometimes we really are those you know, lenses, those pieces, and those pieces come out, and that's part of what we are. But if we don't get to the core of who we are, then, you know, we're telling someone else's story. We're not telling our own. So when I started to do all of this past life work, what happened was I was really able to separate and figure out certain things that I don't want to do at this stage in my life, because I could figure out what my story had led me to do and who it had led me to be. And when I was able to put down those things and I could name them and say, you know, I don't want to be in the situation where I have all these dreams all the time about being a maid. I just had one the other day about being working at a banquet and having to clean up after people. And, you know, and then I was up in these rafters, which to me, that's like the higher rooms, the attic, that's the part of the self that's very, very, oh, academic and excited by ideas and this sort of thing. And I kind of swooped in, and I was afraid that I would fall because there were these strange boards that were kind of weak and things. But then I realized it was a dream, and so I ended up like kind of swooping in and flying down and realizing that I had to kind of hit ground. So I went to the ground in the dream, and I was walking around at some sort of a festival or something, and realizing that I needed to go back to complete my hours at this banquet. And, you know, then I woke up from the dream, and a lot of what I'll do with my dream work is I'll still work on the dream or mull over the state of the dream while I'm awake. So, like, in earlier stages of that dream, and I know I'm, like, you know, going off from sacred celebrations, but it all kind of ties back to this soulful kind of living. You know, I was working on the dream in my waking life, and when I've had the dream before, and I've had this dream for years and years about being either a nanny or a servant, so, you know, being in the situation where I'm in the family where I see a lot from the outside, and yet I have to interface with the family directly or the group directly. And so in this dream, in earlier perseverations of it, I lost a lot of energy around, you know, how should I interface with the family? How should I be a banquet server? Is it okay what I'm doing? Is it okay to want things for myself in this context, or do I just have to be a servant like think Downton Abbey? You know, is it okay? And this time I didn't, and I never went back in the dream to the banquet space. And all day I've kind of been like, I never went back to that place in the dream. And I was like, wow, I didn't have to go back. I didn't have to go back. Like, so this pull that's like pulled me back to tell the rest of this story that really isn't mine, I realized I did this big shift and I was like, I don't have to go back. I don't ever have to go back in a dream and be a servant if I don't want to. There's nothing that's pulling me back. I don't need to complete that story. I can let it go. And I realized how good I feel about letting that part of my story go. And that's definitely been a part of my story for not only in this lifetime, playing that kind of auxiliary servant kind of peacekeeper, caretaker role, but it's also been my story in past lives as well. And I don't have to go back. So I know I don't want to do that work in this lifetime, and that I can show up and I can grow more authentically, and I can share what my real gifts are, which are about, you know, counseling and doing intuitive work and teaching and these sorts of things. And I don't have to go back. I never have to go back there. So I guess what I'm trying to say is that as I've gone through different perseverations and contemplated different ways that I show up in my life, part of that has been figuring out how I'm going to use my energy and what I'm willing to go back to and what I have to say no to for my soul and for my heart and for, you know, all of that. And I've learned over time that often when you say no and it's a hard no, it's because you weren't heard for so long. I wrote this in the article too. But you know, now that I've stayed away and I've said no with my lack of presence for so long, I'm coming kind of full circle around again. And now my no is softer inside. Like, I'm like, oh, well, you know, my father's going to transition and I don't know that I want to leave a legacy where we haven't interfaced again, where we haven't shared our story about who we are now. You know, I mean, pretty ferocious and scary when I was younger because we were locked in this power battle. But now he's just an old man who's trying to complete his story too. So I don't know how this is going to play out, and I don't know what I will end up doing. But I know that this energy has shifted, and I know that as it shifts, more people come in the door to work with me. I feel like I can share and give more with people in terms of counseling and the intuitive work that I do. I'm clearer about that. I'm more comfortable showing up. So I encourage you in your own life to look at your own story and to start to figure out what these threads look like, which are the threads of obligation, of, you know, of this energy that has more to do with what you've been told you should be than indeed what you really truly are. And I just encourage you to sit with that, whether it has to do with your business and your career and your job life, whether it has to do with your intimate relationships and forming bonds that way, or whether it has to do with your family of origin. You know, sometimes we carry big, big burdens with us. And you know, in my family, when I would go back for the holidays, because I was in college, you know, and then I was in graduate school, I would go back for the holidays, and there was a lot of very, very loaded, and I bet a lot of you can relate to this, there was a lot of very loaded, tense energy around that experience, and I almost felt like I was losing a part of myself. And I would get really, really angry, but I would suppress it. I didn't really realize how angry or how frustrated I was because it wasn't acceptable for me to look at it. I would put it in my shadow. And, you know, and I would go home, and the last time I went home, I actually left very, very abruptly. This was about 6 years ago, I guess. We went home for the holidays, and I just was so angry. A lot of archetypal stuff was coming up around the little match girl, the story of the little match girl. If you guys know it, it's about this little girl who was outside in the cold, and she was It's a Hans Christian Andersen story. She was lighting all of these matches, and she was seeing all these beautiful celebratory things through the window. She was seeing someone carving a turkey, and she was seeing people around a Christmas tree. And she died because she wouldn't allow herself to open up. She wouldn't allow herself to go get support or to get warmth. And she died, but she died living through her visions of this beauty. And in my family of origin, I always kind of felt that way because our family story had a lot to do with withholding. I bet a lot of you can identify with this too. Withholding if you didn't do things a certain way. So there was always a contingency. It was never enough just to show up and be yourself. You always had to show up and do it the way that my father wanted you to, or else you may as well not show up at all. So this led me to a place where I felt a big sense of scarcity. And even though I had what looked like external support, internally I didn't feel supported. I remember very, very strongly going back to visit and needing some eye drops, and I don't think I had any cash on me, or I didn't have a credit card on me. And I said a couple times from the back seat, oh my gosh, my eyes are just stinging and burning. I really need eye drops. And there was this invisibility factor that happened because my dad didn't stop and get eye drops. I don't make a lot of money, but I would find eye drops for a person on the street if they were in pain. But there was this whole idea that, like, I was irresponsible because I didn't have what I needed, so I didn't deserve these. So, and you become invisible after a while, and you stop paying attention to what your own internal needs are. And then you get in this conflict back and forth about, do I have a right to want that? Because it just is this monkey mind thing, and it's been reinforced so much. So part of my separation from my family was to clear everything, get everything really, really clear so I could figure out what I really did feel and what I really did need and what I can give to myself on my own terms. And then when I come back to the table, I come back with some power. I come back as a power broker because I can leave again, so it puts me in a different situation, and it's sad that we have to be a power broker in our family that way. But in my family of origin, I really do have to do that in order to, escape this whole, downward spiral of you shouldn't do this, you shouldn't do that, this isn't a legitimate way to live your life. Like, this whole thing, I have to say, look, and I did it before when I was younger, too. When I was in college, I moved to New York City, and I told my brother where I lived, and I didn't tell my parents. And I told my brother under no circumstances was he to tell my parents, because they just made it so hard. Like, my family just made it so hard. So I had to have power some way, and my power was in my absence. And I did that on a very conscious level. And I realized in some ways I'm playing that out again, that pattern out again, because I've had to. Because if I didn't, I lose my own identity, my own sense of what's true, my own competency. And I wonder if you guys can relate to that story as well. So in terms of celebrating the holidays and things like that, I would go home. I would feel very, very compromised, very frustrated. I would live through a lot of these visions and fantasies. But my actual interaction with my family wouldn't be that positive, and sometimes it would be just downright dark. My dad would just say things that were really mean and discounting for attention, because he just didn't understand the difference between negative and positive attention. And I tried to elevate the situation, and many times I just couldn't. And so my only course of action was to leave. So then I would say, it was 2008. I was getting ready to finish my graduate program, and I was given an amazing trip from the universe. And if you ever want to hear that show that's back there in the archives, I got to go to Turkey for 10 days, and it was an amazing trip. I thought I was going to go on this trip, and then I thought I was going to pay for it and all this stuff, and then I found out that the funds that I thought that I had consolidated weren't there because I had to use them for something else. And I just put it out there in the universe that I wanted to go to Turkey in a gazillion different ways. I created a bank account for Turkey, even though I knew I'd need to use it for other things. I asked all the people around me if they had been to Turkey. I looked at my parents' pictures. I thought I wanted to go to Greece, and they had gone to Turkey. And then my dad, ironically, was celebrating my birthday late and took me to see Lorena McKinnitt that evening. And she's this, if you guys don't know her, she's amazing. She's this folk singer, this amazing singer of sacred songs, and she sings songs from sacred traditions all over the world. She told a story about going on a trip to Turkey, and I could tell from the order of the story, the parts of the places that she said she went, that she had gone on the same tour as my parents had gone on through Globus. And, you know, if you know anything about manifestation, which I'm sure you do, you know that when the universe starts playing with you with these visions, you're really, you know, you're really working on a quantum level to work through any impediments or any limiting beliefs around them. And so, like, when the universe, like, did that evening, I was there for the weekend, and that Saturday we went, I was like, oh, my gosh, this is going to happen sooner than I think, because the universe is mirroring it back to me. So I went home, and by Christmas, I got to go on this amazing 10-day trip to Turkey, took one flight inside Turkey, paid less for it than I would pay for 4 days in a cheap hotel room. So it was amazing. The universe definitely wanted me to go on this trip. But the point of this story, and you can read it in my blog, too, if you go to the Jenny's Gems blog, you can scroll back and read all about that trip and how I worked with manifestation to make that come to pass. But the point of this story is because the trip, at the end of the trip, we were supposed to get back around December, oh, I think it was December 12th, or no, what, December 16th or something like that. And I was still planning on going up to visit my parents that weekend, and then we got snowed in, which this is a really cool story, too. We got snowed in. The plane that was supposed to come in from Boston to Amsterdam to pick us up and take us back to, I think it was O'Hare Airport, and then we were supposed to get a flight to Hopkins, was grounded in Boston because it was a huge snowstorm. And so we got a 3-day trip on the airlines to Amsterdam. We were able to go there, and we stayed in this hotel, and it was just an amazing, amazing trip. So I got 10 days in Turkey and then 3 days in Amsterdam. And when I got back, it was too close to the holidays to be able to go home. It would have been too close to try to book a bus pass and all of this, a bus ticket and all of this. So I decided to stay in Columbus. Like, I'd had the trip of a lifetime, and, you know, and so, you know, I just decided to stay home. And it was just so weird because, you know, I'd gone to my parents year after year after year after year after year, and no matter how tense or uncomfortable or painful the experience was, it was just what I did. I was on autopilot. And so when I woke up that Christmas morning, I had all this extra energy flooding me, this angry, restless energy that normally I used to brace myself and use in situations to defend myself in my family. And because I wasn't in that situation, I was able to recognize, wow, like, I'm storing up a surplus of stuff so that I can defend myself. And I didn't realize just how defended I was and how defended I felt like I needed to be until I felt it in my body. So not only did I get this amazing gift of going to Turkey and then this amazing gift of going to Amsterdam, but then I got this amazing gift of realizing how I was using my body's energy. And that was amazing because I never would have known it. If I had gone home, I would have just gone back into that same autopilot quantum place where I use my energy in a certain way, and I wouldn't have known that, wow, like, oh, I need that energy to brace for this experience. And what could I do with that creative energy? I worked with this with one of my first clients, too. What can you do with that creative energy when you're not using it to defend yourself or to fight for your position or to maintain traction, you know? What can you do with it? It's this amazing store of creative energy that you can do anything with. So I encourage you in the days coming up to notice how it is you're using your energy, how much you're putting into situations that feel like they're bottoming out, where you're losing your power, and how much you're able to turn that energy back to yourself, give it to your inner child, give it to self-care. You know, sign up for tarot classes or chakra classes or meditation classes or take a painting class or take a trip. Take that energy and use it to do something in this time, in the here and now, that's going to enrich who you are and who you're becoming. And I can't emphasize this enough, because we are not static. We are always moving in space and time. And even if we're just somewhere in our imagination, even if we've completed something in our imagination, the fact that we've brought it into our imagination means that we're in the very beginning stages of making it real. Then we just have to line up and be patient and see how it shows up on the other end. But we're changing as we're bringing it into being in our imagination. So don't discount wherever you are in your continuum, you know, however you're feeling in your life. Don't discount where you're at. That's just one version of the story. It's the practical here and now where you're at. There's also this magical version in your imagination. And if you can take your imagination and just ground your limiting beliefs, then you're in your intention setting realm. And when you're in your intention setting realm, then you're playing with your intuition. Then you're noticing energetically what you're picking up from the universe, like when Lorena McKinnett told the story of the turkey trip in the same order as the trip my parents had taken. Then the universe is playing with you. It's saying, oh, we hear your intention, and this is how we're coming and showing you this. This is what we're showing you. And then you're in the place of manifestation. So wherever you're at, like, you know, if you're right now in a situation where you've just broken up with someone and you've given up on a program that you were in, no matter where you're at, just stop and take this time to create sacred space and allow yourself to sink down and imagine without limitation what it is you want your life to be like. And the more that you can hold that energy and feel that connection in your body, the more that you will be able to see it manifested in your outer world. And in these days coming up with Christmas and Kwanzaa, I know Hanukkah is past, but where we're in these situations that where there's a lot of tension and a lot of expectation about how we should behave and what we should do. You know, I mean, I wrote in the article, this is a time where everybody is supposed to bury the hatchet and extend an olive branch. And that's great. That's a wonderful abstract concept. And you can do that for sure. But don't lose your own power in the process. Don't allow anyone to make you invisible. Don't allow anyone to make your story invisible, but also notice how much space you really need to take up to feel there. You know, working with clients who struggle with, you know, self-esteem and things like that, and saying no and saying this is how I see it and holding boundaries and things like that, and with myself as well, because we all struggle with holding boundaries in different situations. You know, you can give back the person the same thing that they give you. You can just say, well, that's not the way I see it. This is my tradition and that's yours. And then you can let it go. But when you allow yourself to say, no, I'm drawing a line in the sand and this is my line, actually people will back up. If you say it with strength and with awareness, people will back up. It's only when you over-talk it and try to convince them that then people will try to have conversations with you and you'll end up losing power. So I encourage you to, at the same time that you're interfacing in these situations that are difficult, where you have a tendency to maybe lose a lot of energy around, you know, people wanting you to align a certain way, for you also at the same time to create your own sacred celebrations, your own ways of doing things, and your own meaning at this time. And it's so important at this time because right now astrologically coming up on a new year, we're setting the stage for 2014. We're putting 2013 behind us. And it's so important to start by looking at what is important to you to manifest. Not what's important to your family, not what's important to your culture, not what's important to your work, unless your work is meaningful for you. But if it's like, you know, your daily office job or whatever and you lose power at it, what's important to you? What makes you feel whole and centered and peaceful and magical? Those are the most important aspects. The most important things to look at are those things. And we all, you know, lose some power sometimes. But the more that you build up inside this strength about what's important to you, the less it will matter when you go and you interface with people who don't particularly speak to you so much. So that was kind of what I wrote my article about. And I'm really, really excited to be doing this for Bellspree, and I'm really excited about going back and writing once a month for a publication. So let me find, here, I'm going to play a real quick endorsement here, and then I'm going to get to the second part of the show, and I'm going to share with you a new thing that's coming up with Sacred Bracelets. So here you go.
Hey, Jenny, I heard you have a new sponsor on your show.
Yeah, I'm so excited. John Addison of Holistic Highways to Wisdom, who's an amazing, amazing video maker, and he creates videos for people who are in the metaphysical and spiritual community to promote their services and get their energy and their message out there.
Yeah, I know John very well. He's done videos for me as well.
Awesome. I know he's a great asset to our community. Anyway, if you want to check out John as a practitioner, or if you'd like to check out his wonderful series of metaphysical videos, just pop on over to holistichighwaystowisdom.com. Back to the show.
So we just have about 10 minutes left, and I want to share with you, for folks who have listened to the show before and who know, I also wear another hat as a jewelry designer. I design bracelets called Sacred Bracelets, and they're to work with your own energies, your own manifestation, your own dreams, to create a tailor-made piece for you to work with, and I do that intuitively with clients. So I just want to share with you real briefly a new technique that I came up with because I'm so excited about it. They're called Mala Mandala Bracelets. And, you know, if you've ever studied Jung believed that mandalas were a representation, an artistic representation of the consciousness changing in us and the collective consciousness, and that they represented a shift in psyche. So mandalas have been a really, really powerful theme. I keep on my desktop a folder of all of these different mandalas, and I bring them up periodically. But I had this wonderful idea. A dear friend who I went to Pacifica with put a mandala on my page the other day, and I had just designed a bracelet for myself, or it might not be for myself. I might sell it. I don't know yet. But I designed a bracelet to work with a dream or to bring a dream to consciousness that I had when I was about 7 years old. And this bracelet is designed like a mala. So a mala has 111 beads at 7, I think 26 or 21, I can't remember. And then at the very end it has a bead that's a transitioning bead. And it has 111, but 108 of them are a separate bead. So in this bracelet I designed, it's just like a sacred bracelet. So it's got all the wraps, and then it's got all the beautiful, beautiful beadwork, tiny, 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 tiny seed beadwork on the top layers. But it it goes around just like a mala, and it has those three separating beads so that you can work with it kind of like you would a rosary and hold energy in each of the beads. So, and that's a Buddhist tradition. But then on top of it, I'm doing it based on a mala, or I'm sorry, a mandala. So if you have a mandala image that you'd like me to use to do this, I'll take a mandala and I'll do a 111 bead bracelet for you that incorporates the actual visual of the mandala all the way around, except imagine it three-dimensionally, and also the power of a mala. So I'm so excited about this because these bracelets hold so much magical energy. And I just started one. You can go to the Sacred Bracelets page and see the mandala, and then you can see what I call the Creatrix Bowl, which is the crystal bowl that I put my beads in, so that you can imagine what the bracelet will look like when it's done. Now, as I'm starting to do it, I'm trying to figure out the spacing, because it's going to take a certain amount of spacing with 111 beads to be able to get all the way around the mala. So I'm working right now with that and making sure that I know how to space the beads to create the whole full design. So this one is just a test, but I encourage you to check out the page because I think these are really powerful and really unique in the jewelry world, and I'll be having them up on my Etsy page as well. So that is what I wanted to share tonight. I encourage you, and, you know, I mean, the other piece of it is, you know, there are so many ways to create sacred space. We can make special meals. We can carve out time to do creative processes like that with friends. There's so many ways to create richness in our lives. And we really have more power than we think we do to be able to activate this energy. And we don't have to do just what we're told to do. And we can do some of it and not lose as much power if our lives are richer on the inside and lived more on our own terms on the inside. And maybe we choose not to interface with our relatives. You know, maybe we do what I do, which is take a 5-year hiatus and regroup and see where we're at, kind of thing. And we have a right to do that in our lives too. I also encourage you to find people who aren't going to have anybody to celebrate special time with at this time of year. Whether you celebrate this holiday or not, we either are celebrating it or we're reacting or noticing the people around us celebrating it, which means that it's a time of year where people can have a lot of tension and a lot of stress and a lot of sadness and a lot of things that are unresolved. And when you can open your heart and your home and your life and your ears to their stories, it can shift things so, so amazingly and so magically. So I encourage you to check out the, oh, and there's one other thing, and that is I'm going to be doing a series, I hope to be doing a series of Inner Voice Intuitive Tarot classes in January or February. I'm getting a group of people who are interested to gather now, and these classes will be interactive, and they will be part lecture. But there will also be lots of practice with the cards. There'll be some chances to do some collaging with the images in the cards. And they're going to be very Jungian-based. So we're going to bring in a lot of concepts about the shadow and the inferior function and consciousness raising and the four sacred elements, all of these things that Jung talked about, alchemy. So if this interests you, I do teach these classes online through Skype, and I can do private classes that way, or if you're in the CBUS area, I encourage you to check out the classes. The interest is forming now, and I'm just so excited to offer these classes in the middle of the winter when it's cold and we get bored and restless and stir crazy. So check out Inner Voice Intuitive Tarot Guidance on Facebook. Check out Sacred Bracelets if you're interested in that. You can also find my videos on YouTube on the Four Sacred Elements. And thanks so much for listening, and I hope however you celebrate your holidays, however you celebrate this time of year leading into the new year, pretty soon we're going to be here at the longest night of the year, and then leading into the new year. However you do it honoring yourself and honoring what's true for you and honoring, you know, your deep sacred self and your own traditions that you're creating. And share your light with others as well. So I'm going to play, let's see here, let me find it. This is Dar Williams, who, if you don't know her music, she's an amazing, amazing word wizard. This is The Blessings, which is all about noticing synchronicities in your life.
And Amos says the fool turns fool, the joke is on me. I got all those birds flying off of the tree. That's the sea. Poets that we never find time to know, but when time stops, I found the place where the way yet go.
Whatever you do between now and next week, go and make magic, feel magic, inspire magic, create magic, share magic with others. That is what we're here for. Have a great evening, everybody. Good care now. Bye.